Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
The presenting sponsor for today's episode of Head of the Pack is Visa, a network working for everyone.
Welcome back to the latest Head of the Pack. I'm Matt Schneiman here with my good pal Bill Huber, coming to you from the Lambeau Field press box after the Packers' 27-17 win over the Pittsburgh Steelers. Bill, it wasn't pretty, but they're 3-1. And after the way they started this season in Jacksonville with that 38-3 loss to the Saints, you can't complain about 3-1. Obviously, there's some more stuff to get into in terms of the injuries and possible gloomy clouds looming over this win. But the fact that they found a way to win fairly comfortably, I would say, against a team with some pretty damn good players on both sides of the ball when the Packers themselves weren't at their best, specifically on offense, even though they scored 27 points. You know, Aaron Rodgers was not sharp, I don't think. It's got to be a good sign when you do that. And you know, finding different ways to win is a sign of a good team, and the Packers have done that in the last couple of weeks.
I think it's a really good win. I realize Pittsburgh's 1-3. I realize Ben Roethlisberger is nowhere near the guy he was 10 years ago when he put the Packers in the Super Bowl, but this is a damn good team. Najee Harris is a really good running back. Throw line stinks. I get that too. But he's got a bunch of receivers that are pretty good. The defense is, you know, between Watt and Hayward, those are two real game changers. Fitzpatrick's a game changer. There is nothing for the Packers to apologize about by winning by 10 and what was a 17-point game until really late. And you're right, to win when Rodgers isn't at his best, that's huge for these guys. I mean, A.J. Dillon, and we've been waiting all year for A.J. Dillon to get going. He had a good game tonight, too. So, yeah, I think it's a terrific win. I don't think I have anything to apologize for.
Yeah, you bring up A.J. Dillon. You know, the Packers had been averaging 3.37 yards per carry entering this week. And when I wrote that story and used that stat for that story, it was entering the Thursday night game. That was 29th in the league. Tonight they averaged over 5 yards a carry. A.J. Dillon had 15 carries for 81 yards. I thought, you know, Aaron Jones ran 15 times for far fewer yards. I mean, that's not an indictment on Aaron Jones. I think it just goes to show that A.J. Dillon is still going to have a big role in this offense. You know, he wasn't a huge factor the first couple weeks, but they can turn to him in a game like this when he has the hot hand. And he was catching passes, too. So today was a really important game for him. They finally got the running game going. You know, the connection to Devontae Adams wasn't great. I believe he had 6 catches for 62 yards. There were a couple that Rodgers should have hit him on. There was pressure in Rodgers' face on a couple of those that I think probably affected the throws, but like we talked about, Rodgers missed a bunch of throws that he normally makes. On the deep ball to Tonyan, there were a couple crossers to Adams. The one to Adams on fourth down that Randall Cobb broke up because he thought it was intended for him. Like, there were so many points left out there. And still for the Packers to squeeze out a 10-point win, I think that's nothing but a good sign.
Yeah, it had a deep shot to Mercedes Lewis there too. First half, I believe. You know, maybe if Lewis keeps running rather than backpedaling, that's a catch, but that was another missed opportunity there too. You mentioned the run game, and I wrote about the run game too, but what I probably should have mentioned more prominently in my story is look at the D-lines they play. New Orleans' D-line is really good. San Fran's is really good. Pittsburgh's today really good. So to run the ball pretty well today against another top-flight defensive line or different defensive front seven, with, once again, a really young and learning-as-they-go line. Again, nothing but positives. And if they can ever get healthy and they can ever get Jenkins back, and if Bakhtiari gets back here at some point in the next month or whatever it's going to be, they're going to have a formidable line, and they're going to have a really good all-around offense. You know, LaFleur mentioned today that it was time to get Dillon going, and he said going off the field something along the lines of a way to step up today. And then he caught himself and realized Dillon just needed opportunities. Today, he got him for 15 for 81. Dillon lamenting the non-touchdown, the 25-yarder, said he needs to pick up his knees some more. But otherwise, a strong game by him. And yeah, you can't count on Aaron Jones, especially 200 and what, 205 pound Aaron Jones, you can't count on him to have 20 touches every single week.
Right. Let's talk about what I think is the biggest story from tonight, and that's the injury to Jaire Alexander, who is one of the best corners in the league. Late in the third quarter, he blows up that pass in the flat to Najee Harris on 4th and 4. Doesn't get credited for the tackle, but he stopped that play. And then Oren Burks and Chandon Sullivan were kind of on cleanup duty. He goes down. It's a right shoulder injury. That's about all we know. Flea, the Packers head trainer, was kind of coddling Jaire's arm, his right arm, as they walked off the field. And then as Jaire was being carted off the field, he kind of raised his left hand to the crowd. I didn't see much movement from his right arm, and he was ruled out for the game shortly thereafter. Mike Garofolo from NFL Network reported that it was believed to be an AC joint sprain, which is obviously better than a broken collarbone, but Matt LaFleur said he didn't have any additional information on the severity of Alexander's shoulder injury, but if he does miss any extended period of time, that's obviously a brutal blow to a defense that is already without their all-pro edge rusher in Za'Darius Smith for a while. For as much grief as Kevin King gets, you probably want him out there over Isaac Yiadom. So that there are already a couple key injuries, not only on defense, but both sides of the ball. And this is just a team that can't really afford many more, especially to one of its top five players in Jaire. So that'll be something to monitor here in the coming days, but certainly not a good sign coming out of this win.
No, you had a feeling it wasn't a good sign when he got injured in the third quarter and there was no injury update whatsoever ever provided in the press box. So you figured that wasn't good. LaFleur said he didn't know anything, which is like impossible to believe. So that's probably not good either. I did a little research about AC injuries. I didn't know much about them. They go from grade 1, which is minor, to grade 6, which is awful. Grades 4, 5, 6 generally require surgery. But it's not always the worst news. Like Joe Hayden of Pittsburgh, he had one in the 2019 opener. He played the next week. Randall Cobb had one in the preseason finale in 2015. He played all 16 games. So I'm guessing that's why LaFleur didn't detail anything, because he's probably waiting for, you know, what's the grade in us? Is it grade 1 or is it grade 3? So I'm guessing that's why he played dumb with us. So, yeah, the medical updates this week will be huge. I mean, it's hard to play defense when you've got a lackluster pass rush without Za'Darius Smith and lackluster coverage, which is going to be the case without Alexander. So this is going to be a big problem with Cincinnati, too, with Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd. That is quite the trio.
Yeah, it's not an easy receiving core to go against. The Packers will have their work cut out for them against the Bengals, who are 3-1. You know, yes, they've played some, you know, they beat the Steelers pretty handily. They beat the Jaguars. I'm forgetting the other team they beat, but Bengals are a good team in Cincinnati afternoon next Sunday. That'll be a tough game, especially with those injuries. Another big storyline from this game on a more positive note for the Packers was kind of the arrival, the emergence of Randall Cobb. I think this is what Aaron Rodgers had in mind when he stumped so hard for the Packers to trade for him this offseason. 4 of his 5 receptions were on third down for first downs. Had 2 touchdown catches today. If he can produce out of the slot, and Rodgers was talking after the game today about just how well he knows that position, and the guys were talking about, you know, how he just knows what routes to run. And I get the feeling it's almost that fifth sense connection between Rodgers and Randall Cobb that he has with Devontae, that he had with Jordy. And if Randall can develop a role and really produce in this offense, maybe it was more so today because MVS was out, but that could be huge for this offense, especially if they need to put up more points with their defense kind of injured.
You got a lot of weapons, don't they, Matt? It's been interesting that Cobb hasn't gotten a lot of run because Devontae is so good in the slot, and it's a way to get him out of doubles. Alan Lazard's so good in the slot because he's so physical as a blocker. It's been hard to get Cobb snaps. It's going to be hard to keep him off the field after this one. I'm not suggesting it's going to be 50 snaps a game from now on, but it was third down after third down after third down. And what got him going was that initial third down. They're losing 7-0. I think it was a 3rd and 6. He had that bobbling catch for that first down, and that's what got him going. I didn't think he had the jets that he had on that touchdown. He caught the ball around the 11-yard line, and he just hit the gas. He looked far younger than he is. That was a telling play by the guy. The guy's got, he's he's not just here because he's Aaron Rodgers' buddy and he's the connection and all that. No, the guy can still play.
So what you're saying is we should have trusted Aaron Rodgers when he told us Cobb could still play? Yeah. What you're saying is Aaron Rodgers might know more about football than us? No.
No, really? Hard to believe.
Yeah. Corey Bajorquez is probably the best punter in the world. That's an exaggeration, but it was funny because you said to him when we talked to him on Friday, you know, you're the best punter we've ever seen. I mean, you've been covering this team for, what is this, your 14th year? This is only 14, my third season. But, you know, that's important. And obviously nobody likes to see the punter coming on, but he's good. Isaac Yiadom had a big downing of his punt on the goal line. It was downed at the 4 eventually. But the Packers just got those smaller contributions that they haven't been getting. You know, Kingsley Keke stepping up with a strip sack. Rashawn Gary continues to do a little bit here and there. Eric Stokes had the game-sealing interception. And those are the kinds of contributions from those secondary and tertiary guys that the Packers are going to need if their stars are injured. Sure, you know, knock on wood, they're still going to have Devontae Adams, Aaron Jones, Aaron Rodgers. But if they can get those contributions from guys you don't expect them from, you know, maybe this team is able to start, let's say, 6-1. They have the Bengals, the Bears, and Washington up next, away, and home. On paper, they should win all three of those games. And if they can get through the first 7 games, 6-1, and then they go into that Thursday night game against Arizona at Arizona in week 8, Arizona's 4-0 now. They slaughtered the Rams today. And let's say they get Bakhtiari back by that Week 8 game, and Jenkins is back, and MVS is back, and Jair's back. They'd be in good shape. So as long as they can tread water for these next couple weeks, I think they should be in prime position.
That'd be something. You know, Stokes needs to play better. I realize he had the pick tonight, but probably too many diving tackle attempts on his part. Another interference call tonight. He's got to play better. Channon Sullivan's got to play a lot better. He's a missed tackling machine, Matt.
Yeah. He has the most missed tackles on the team, and I wrote in my story leading up to this game that PFF had the Packers graded as their third best tackling team, and the Packers did not have a single individual in the top 45 in the league in missed tackles. Channon Sullivan is not a great tackler, and the bad story for the Packers is if Jair misses any extended period of time and Kevin King clears the concussion protocol this week, then you're going to have King and Stokes on the outside and Sullivan in the slot. Whereas if everyone's healthy, it's Jair and Stokes on the outside and King in the slot, which I think is your ideal three. I mean, Channon Sullivan, he's done some nice things, but like you said, he's a tackling liability, and that's not great for teams that can just dink and dunk their way down the field against that too high safety if the Packers play that.
Yeah, Sullivan's confounding. I wrote something up before the game today. Last year, looking at Pro Football Focus's numbers, he gave up, I'm going to my story now. He gave up 1.13 yards per coverage snap last year, which is really good. Heading into this game, he was at 2.38. So he was basically double the coverage yards per snap. His receptions allowed per snap were basically cut in half. So he's really struggling. And you're right. They're stuck with him on there now. For the foreseeable future, I would think, unless Alexander can make a rapid recovery, he's got to get a lot better. The offensive line, Matt, I want to go back to what you were talking about before. They gave up 3 sacks and I think 7 or 8 tackles for losses. If you just look on paper, that's not good. But there was never a point today where I thought, boy, they're really struggling.
Right.
Right. Maybe I just missed it, but I thought they were pretty darn good against a damn good front 7.
I agree. And Rodgers made a point to say in his press conference, he said, yeah, I was sacked 3 times, but one of those was when TJ Watt tripped me. The other was when he slid into a sack, essentially. He slid down behind the line of scrimmage on his own. And then the other one, there was one other that he kind of had.
It was that blown blitz where Devin Bush came through, I think, first drive.
Right. I believe that was Runyon, who it looked like he missed his assignment. But listen, I thought one of the most telling quotes from the press conference, Aaron Rodgers' press conference, that is, was he said multiple games missed for both Elgton Jenkins and David Bakhtiari in the first 4 games Rodgers said he would have been ecstatic, was the word that he used, with two wins. And he said, here we are with three. So I feel like there's a little bit of a sense in that locker room, or at least with Rodgers, with regards to the offensive line, that they're playing with house money. And for however many wins they get without two of probably the top 10 offensive linemen in the league, certainly the Packers' two best offensive linemen, is a positive and a bonus, it seems, at least. And, you know, Josh Nyman probably didn't have as good of a game as he did against the 49ers. I'll have to look back. It's tough to always watch all parts of the play in real time. So once I look back, I'll probably write more this week about how they utilized the chip blocks today and how those offensive linemen did. But listen, for as many games as they can, that they at least keep Aaron Rodgers on his feet for the majority of the game and give him time to throw, which I think he did today. And whenever he is flushed out of the pocket, it's not the worst case scenario because he can still make plays on the run, like we saw with that rushing touchdown and even throws he makes on the run. Any game like that, even if it's not perfect, is a positive, because you're not expecting perfection from Josh Nyman, two rookies, and John Runyon Jr.
I thought, sticking with the old line, I thought Billy Turner, again, we need to go back and watch. But he's the guy who faced T.J. Watt for most of the game. Granted, he got some help and all that, but T.J. Watt did not run rush out over him. Turner's a good player. I know people, and by people I mean fans, think he's a not very good player at all these things, probably based on the championship game where he got moved to left tackle. But as a right tackle, he's a good player. T.J. Watt's beaten the hell out of a lot of players in his career. And again, yeah, at the end of the day, Watt comes up with two sacks on the official stat sheet, but I would give that a decisive victory to Turner today.
Absolutely. And one of those sacks was with his right foot.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, let's get to some.
And then the slotting dive down was the other one. So I would.
Exactly.
Hell of a day.
All right, let's get to some questions. We had a bunch. I saw over 30 replies to my tweet asking for questions. Let's tackle some of those. First one from Kevin Stalsberg. I can't help but be skeptical of this team. The Packers haven't beaten a team with a winning record. How good is this team at the quarter-ish mark? I take for a grain of salt that winning record thing. I mean, it's early in the season. And if they beat the Bengals next week, and then the Bengals go on to lose a couple in a row, then it'll be, oh, the Bengals were a fluke at the beginning of the season. That's not a real win either. Listen, I think the Packers should be talked about in consideration as one of the best teams in the NFC. I mean, going into this week, everyone was talking about, oh, the Rams are invincible, Matthew Stafford, this awesome defense, and they got their doors blown off in LA against the Cardinals. And people are like, oh, the Cardinals, I don't know if they're for real. Well, now they're for real. And the 49ers were great. Now they've lost two in a row. The Seahawks were great after week one. Now they're 2-2. The Chiefs are 2-2. I mean, it's a very small sample size. I think the Packers are a very good team. Not only the intangibles and how they responded to week one, but how they've performed when not at full health. And if they can at least get some of those guys back, when Bakhtiari comes back, Elton Jenkins, let's say Za'Darius Smith doesn't play again. But if Jair's not out for a while and they still have the majority of their guys, listen, every team's going to have injuries. If you can withstand that and have the depth, that's going to be important. And I want to say this is kind of off on a tangent. Devondre Campbell is a damn good inside linebacker. You know, he's covering Juju Smith-Schuster on slants across the field and batting down passes. And then the very next play, he's tackling Juju in the open field for a fourth down stop. I mean, when the hell is the last time we saw that out of a Packers inside linebacker? And Randall Cobb's coming up with big plays. And Corey Bajorquez, you know, I know the Randall Cobb trade was Rodgers doing, but Brian Gutekunst is making some good moves. Kind of reminds me of 2 years ago when he picked up Tyler Irvin and Jared Valdir middle of the season, and they played big roles going to that 2019 NFC title game. They're pushing all the right buttons, and even though they're not at full health, I think they've proven they're a good team even when they're not. And when they get back to full health, I think they can be a great team.
Yeah, going back to the sort of Kevin's question, that winning record thing it's useless at this point of things. Yeah, and I want to go back to the Campbell thing you just talked about. Desmond Bishop had like one really good year. I mean, he had a lot of injury problems, but I'd have to go back that far. I mean, we're talking a decade of bad inside linebacker, not even mediocre inside linebacker. It was bad. I mean, Blake Martinez is fine and Jake Ryan was okay, but Roethlisberger threw back-to-back passes at Devondre Campbell on fourth down and got nothing for it. An incomplete pass and a gain of, what, one?
Yeah.
That's amazing. And the guy is so big that if it's one-on-one against the hole or one-on-one in the hole, you know, Campbell's not one of those 225-pound guys who gets driven backwards for 3 yards. He's big enough to hold his ground. He's been a godsend for him, really has been. So, yeah, these guys are really good. And when they get their alignment back, look out.
So often, you know, with Blake and with Christian Kirksey, we talked about, yeah, they would have a lot of tackles, but those would be, you know, 5 yards past the first down marker, and they kind of, you know, quote unquote, let the ball carrier come to them rather than attacking the guy, as cliche as that sounds. And Devondre Campbell is the latter, and I think that's huge for this defense. From Joe O'Keefe, good question here. What's going on with the opponent's special teams getting deep into the backfield on field goal attempts? Crosby's game winner last week was nearly blocked, and an offsides erased a blocked field goal return for a TD this week. Is this just a coincidence, or have opponents found a weakness? Once is an anomaly, twice is a pattern, three times is a trend. I think it's a slight bit of a concern. Matt LaFleur said he'd look back at the tape. I didn't see it closely enough. Was Robert Tonyan the one blocking on that side again today?
Yeah, I didn't look at it either. I saw it happen live. I saw the flag, and I moved on with my life. I'll have to go back and look at it. I just assumed he was offside, and I took the play. It was a nothing play, but then I got some people on Twitter saying he didn't even look offside, so that would be worth a look. But you're right, Matt, and we've had, you know, Ron Zook, who's a bad special teams coordinator, but he was a great quote. He always said that if you put something bad on film, you'd see it for the next month, because everybody would just come test it until you proved that your flaw was fixed. So yes, it is a legit problem. That being said, Darnell Savage almost blocked a punt today too, and ended up being a 20-yard punt. The Packers scored, I think, to go up 14-7. So the Packers have giveth and taketh away.
That's true. Next, from at RaisinHell89, they haven't played murderer's row for offenses, but do you think the defense has taken a step? Feels like they have in the secondary. I would say yeah, and here's why. Like I alluded to earlier, they're making plays without their main guys. You know, yeah, I know Jair played the first three quarters tonight, but without Zadarius, without Kevin King, the young guys are stepping up. Kingsley Keke, we haven't seen consistent production from him. You know, Kenny Clark has gotten off to a great start after a down year last year. We talked about Campbell with Chris Barnes out. Eric Stokes is making plays. Yes, they haven't played, like you said, Ray, a murderer's row with the Lions, Niners, and Steelers the last 3 weeks, but would you rather them do as expected against those unimpressive offenses or do what they did against the Saints? I don't think we can complain with how the defense has played the last 3 weeks.
No, I do think they have improved. Again, I realize Ben Roethlisberger is not a great quarterback, but he's a good enough quarterback that if your defense is having communication breakdowns like we saw the first 2 weeks, he's good enough to take advantage. His receivers are good enough to take advantage. He missed, was it Smith-Schuster? No, it was James Washington for what should have been a deep touchdown in the first half. But otherwise, I didn't see a lot of guys running free. So I would say that's to go with Mike McCarthy, I would say that's a positive.
What do you got next? You got any good questions?
I do. This is from Sunil. I hope I'm not butchering your name. What do you guys think is the missing link before the Packers? Or what do you think is the missing link to that well-oiled machine in offense, like when they scored 31-plus points per game? I would say to that, they scored 30 against the 49ers, and they scored 27 against a good Pittsburgh defense. So I don't think they're that far away. And when you get your offensive lineman back, I think that solves your problem.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the offensive line has been the hindrance. I wouldn't even call it a hindrance. I mean, the last three games, they've scored 35, 30, and 27, which, if I took a math class in college, I would be able to figure that out. I'm doing it quickly on my calculator right now. That's 30.7 points a game. You know, that would be top three in the league in any year, pretty much. But it's just the accuracy of Rodgers' throws, I think. You know, they left probably 20 points on the board today. They could have scored 50 easily if Rodgers was on point with a couple more throws. And obviously getting Jenkins and Bakhtiari back will really help. So yeah, like the past couple weeks, Rodgers has drawn that pass interference or hit Tonyan for the touchdown on the play up the seam with a linebacker with his back turned. Rodgers missed that one today, and Tonyan wasn't able to reel one in tight coverage. You know, he missed Tonyan on the deep ball. Devontae and him were kind of off today. So, but like we said, I don't think we should look at this, oh, it's a cause for concern, or why aren't they doing this? I think we should look at it more of they were still able to score 27 when that did happen. And I thought Rob Domofsky made a good point in Matt LaFleur's press conference. You know, Rodgers isn't posting these astronomical numbers early in the season like he did last year, and they're still scoring a lot. So I think this team offense has a really good balance, and they showed that today.
From Racketman75, is it time to start worrying about Aaron Jones fumbling issues? Four in the last five games by my count. I will just say yes with an exclamation point.
Four in the last five games?
Well, I have to go back and look, but obviously he had the one today. He fumbled out of bounds against the Niners last
week.
Oh,
okay.
Then you go back to the championship game. That's three. Did he fumble against the Saints or Detroit? I guess I can't recall off the top of my head, but nonetheless, that's at least two weeks in a row where he's coughed it up.
It's a concern, definitely. Yep. You got to be able to hold on to the ball if you're a running back.
Hey, Matt, from Lou695, a whole bunch of other numbers. This is just addressed to you, Matt, so I'm going to give it to you. Hey, Matt, do you think with a Z injury, the Packers look at practice squad players or make a trade for an edge or interior defense alignment?
I don't know. I think they're going to ride Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary till the wheels fall off and rely on Garvin and Rivers, Jonathan Garvin and Chauncey Rivers to fill in when need be. There aren't edge rushers just sitting out there that can come in and take meaningful snaps. Yes, you can probably find guys that are better than Chauncey Rivers and Jonathan Garvin, but they know the system. Mike Smith was talking about how it's difficult for him to kind of reteach everything to a guy like Ladarius Hamilton who just came in. So I don't think they do anything externally. I think they just keep relying on Preston and Rashawn Gary, who have, I think, not been great, but they've done enough since Zadarius went down.
From Heartland Henry, felt like this was the first meaningful Kingsley Keke game. Was it just a high snap count, good opportunity against a weak old line thing, or is he finally emerging as a real number two next to Kenny Clark?
I'll believe it when he does it a couple games in a row. I mean, it's great to see him push that offensive lineman all the way back into Ben Roethlisberger and knock the ball loose, but he's got to do it consistently. We've already seen flashes from him in his career, but we haven't seen him string it together and do it on a consistent basis. So that's what I need to see next from him to really say, okay, maybe Gutekunst was right in kind of sticking with his guys on the defensive line.
Yeah, you know, I sit next to Rob during the games, and it was early in the game, and Keke got blown off the ball. And I go, man, he's been really bad this year. And I said that because I go back to those joint practices against the Jets and then the preseason game against the Jets where he just tore him apart. And I had about $100 that he's going to have a really big time season. That has not happened. He's been a major disappointment until that snap fumble or that sack fumble. You hope for the Packers that there's more of that to come because there's just not a lot of impact players, especially without Z. They really need him.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right. I do have a fun one here.
I know exactly what you're about to say. I see it.
Okay, this is from Quinn. Could you and Bill outrun Ben Roethlisberger in a 40-yard dash? Follow up, could you do it if you had to wear jeans?
I say this with all, in all seriousness and with respect for the Hall of Fame career he's put together, I think I could. I mean, he hit Deontay Johnson on that beautiful deep ball, but to start the game over Jair Alexander. But man, he missed so many easy throws and he can't move at all. I don't know why the Steelers are sticking with him. I mean, I know they don't have a better option in Dwayne Haskins and Mason Rudolph, but at least try something.
Yeah, he's bad. You know, I looked at the stat. His yards per attempt entering the game were like a yard and a half below his career average. I mean, that's bad football, but he is like a statue back there. I mean, back when he could really play, I mean, he wasn't like this great runner, but he was badass. I mean, he was hard to bring down. He was just this gigantic guy back there. And now he's just like a statue. I remember Brad Childress, from back when he's a coach of the Vikings, used to call quarterbacks who couldn't run an iron deer on the lawn. That's what that's what Ben Roethlisberger is. He's an iron deer on the lawn. I feel pretty good about my speed at 48, I got to say.
From Jay Cutler at Smoking J6. Do you have a slinky in your hands while running the podcast or like a rosary? You guys have the best one, BTW. Just wondering what that noise always is. Well, if you hear anything on this podcast, my headphones were stolen from the press box. I literally don't know where they went. I think Jason Wilde accidentally scooped them up, so I'm blaming him for any audio issues. Marissa Morris, our producer, is the best producer in the game, so none of it is her fault. It's all my fault. If something does happen, I'm not wearing headphones today, so we apologize. I will try and get that fixed. And lastly, from Caleb Champeau, I'm hoping I pronounced that right, Champeau. Rodgers seems to be playing within the offense less this year, leading to drives such as the fourth quarter one when they run Dylan four straight runs, then stalled out with three straight incomplete passes. Does the floor reel him in? He has the freedom to do whatever he wants at the line, and he always will because he's Aaron Rodgers. There will be times when I question whether it's his or LaFleur's decision-making, like against the 49ers last week when they could have run the ball and run clock up big, but then they throw three straight deep incompletions, the one that got Davante Adams jacked up, then a deep one to MVS, and then a deep one to Davante, three straight incompletions, three and out, with no time run off the clock. Then the one you brought up, Caleb, in today's game. So, yes, there are questions. That's never going to be taken away from Aaron Rodgers, though, the ability to do whatever he wants, because there's so much more good that comes out of it than bad. But I would say he's not always played within the confines of the offense. He's always going to improvise a little bit because he can and he should be able to. But there have been a couple questionable things he's done the last couple weeks.
Yeah, you're right about all that. He's earned it because he's made more good decisions than bad ones. Maybe it's just one of those things where LaFleur has to come up to him before a series and put out the scoreboard and the clock. Just tell him to rein it in a little bit. You know, look, if Rodgers throws a touchdown pass on one of those, right? Who's bitching?
Exactly.
It's only a bad decision when it doesn't work out, whether it's a play call or when a quarterback changes to the line of scrimmage or a basketball player taking a last second shot. It's only a bad choice if it doesn't work. And if it's a great choice, if it works, or you know what I'm trying to, it's late. If it works, it's a great choice. Something like that.
I was saying, Bill, and we'll close this out by saying this. My lovely mother, who's in town this weekend with my dad to watch the game and visit a little bit, said that I sound a little groggy and dreary on these late night podcasts we do. You know, it was about 1 a.m. in Santa Clara last week, which is 3 a.m. in Central Time, and I was asleep. So I will be as lively as I can be, and I will not use the excuse that it's late anymore as I stumble upon my words because it's 10 o'clock at night. Enough. No more excuses. We all got to do our 1-11.
You should have come into this. I'm in the coach's office, Matt. So if you hear any noise today, there's some fans that kicked in behind me. But in the coach's fridge, there's Red Bull. So you should have worked in this office, and I could have gone somewhere else. You could have stolen a Red Bull, and you'd have been lively. Your parents would have thought, Matt, this is the best podcast you've ever done.
I might do that next week in Cincinnati. Who knows? But that's all we've got for you guys. We appreciate you listening, as always. We've gotten some great, great words of support on the podcast. And listen, let us know anything you want us to do differently. We're open to different things. If you want us to maybe have a guest on, if you want us to do an all questions episode, if you want us to talk about a certain thing, let us know. We're open to feedback. We're the people's podcast. That's what we like to say. I just made that up.
Bill. When did that start?
Just now, 5 seconds ago. But we hope whenever you're listening to this, whether it's Monday morning, Monday night, you enjoy it. Let us know what we can do differently, the same. For Bill, I'm Matt. We'll talk to you next week.